Hi, everybody. Welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take a look at the world of theater and the arts each week, as we do here. And today we're taking a look at not just a great classic show that's been on Broadway many years ago, makes a comeback here and there, but now playing up at Marriott Lincolnshire. They could not have hired a more talented and perfect cast member, and that's what I said in my review, to play the lead role of Frank Abagnale Jr., and that is J.J. Demon, who joins me from a luxurious suite here in the Chicago area. Hey, J.J.
Hi, how are you? What an intro.
Great. So let's talk about Catch Me If You Can. We're going to also spend time on this show talking about you and your background, because you are like this internet sensation. I mean, you know, you're a relatively young guy, and you've stirred up things with a following that is just incredible. Does it all surprise you, by the way, or you're like, yeah, that was the plan?
No, it was not the plan at all. My career definitely took a pivot with like COVID, like many other people. And kind of I fell into this internet world and something that I just loved doing so much, and then built this community. And now it's coming to fruition in my career in a really cool way, too.
And so it leads ultimately, at least right now, to your appearing as Frank Abagnale Jr., the lead in the show Catch Me If You Can at Marriott Lincolnshire. You are here through October 19th, and that'll be a final day, because Marriott's schedule is such that I know that you just don't get extensions up there, though I'm sure they would if they could with you. So it's until October 19th. Let me just say MarriottTheater.com for tickets. Theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E, at the end. Always appreciate when that happens. But first of all, for folks who don't know this story, it's a true one. Fill people in. What is this story all about?
Well, yeah, so it's the show is based off the movie for with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks. And then that is based off of the memoir that Frank Abagnale Jr. himself and his writer helped him write, which was basically about his life as a teenage con man and him running away from home, which then led to him writing all of these fake checks and basically stealing money from banks, becoming a Pan Am pilot, not a real pilot, but he would fly for free all over the world.
He got the uniform.
In the jump seat, and pretend to be a co-pilot. And then he would also then go on to pretend to be a doctor, kind of pretend to be a lawyer, pass the bar exam in New Orleans, all of these crazy things, falls in love. And this is all in the span of like a few years, all before he was 21 years old. So it's really a wild story of what he got away with. And you get to see kind of this kid who kind of just falls into all of this and like, I guess, falls upwards. So you know what I mean? He just like figures it out as he goes along, flying by the seat of his pants. And then as the show goes on, he starts realizing how serious this is. Like, it's not, he thinks it's a game because he has no concept of how crazy it is what he's doing. And then he kind of ends up realizing that it's crazy.
And it's not as though, when you think of his home life, it's not as though his dad was a great role model for him, right?
No. Yeah. Yeah. His dad was kind of teaching him the ways of swindling people. His dad was also basically not on the run from the IRS, but like he was dodging like faulty checks and he was owing lots of money. And so he learned a lot of that from his father, for sure.
And what's really interesting to me about this is that, you know, this could just be your story, Frank Jr.'s story, but we actually get the flavor of his background of growing up. His mom, in some ways we learn, is no angel either, in terms of the relationship and that kind of thing. So the book written by Terrence McNally, one of the great book writers of all time and playwrights. I mean, so he chose to put this together. There are some who say, you know, we didn't really get we didn't really get the full view of Frank in this. It makes Frank look good in this. You're a very endearing character, but he's not that great a guy. What is your view? I think Terrence McNally actually brings in a lot of those pieces and lets the audience decide for themselves.
Oh, absolutely. I think it has a lot to do with the direction and the acting as well as what was written in the book, because there are so many lines that I have to say in this show that I'm like, this is the most cliche, quintessential, like icky, cringy guy, like slimy. Like some of the lines genuinely come across the way he talks to women, like women, even his love interest. I'm like, I would never say that, but you have to sell it because this is who this character is. And you still have to make the audience like him and root for him. That's my job to do. You know what I mean? And the director's job. So I think we do a good job of balancing it, but I do agree. It does make him a sympathetic character because you get to see where he comes from.
You know, when I think of the roles you've done, we'll talk about this later, but everything from in Hamilton and Back to the Future and all of that. Can you play? Is it your goal? Let me put it that way. Do you want to one day play this horrendous evil character on stage, Scar in Lion King?
No. I don't know. I mean, it can be fun to transform in theater, but honestly, there are days because I feel so much like myself on stage as Frank Jr. I feel like I'm playing myself because I'm bringing a lot of JJ to it. I, at times when the audience is like scoffs or like reacts negatively, I have to remind myself, like, they're not mad at me. They're not scoffing at me. They're scoffing at this character. But like, I take it personally. I like to play the roles like the Marty McFly, like the boys who you're able to root for and the sweet, wholesome people. But you know, it's good to play the different sides of characters.
You know, one of the interesting things, and I followed you on social media for a while, and I guess you got some challenges from people saying, you're leaving Hamilton, you're going to the Chicago area, how could you leave Broadway? And of course, at that time, you had a very great defense for it, which I'll let you talk about. But here's the thing. You did that, I think maybe you had just gotten here. I'm not sure if that conversation was before the show opened, but you're here now. Mm-hmm. Interestingly to note that so many of your fellow cast members, and we can start with Nathaniel Stampley, who plays the cop who was after you all the time. The truth is, they all have Broadway credentials. So what is bringing Broadway to Chicagoland?
Oh, yeah. No, the cast is stacked. And also, even all of the Chicago actors that are here that mostly do Chicago theater and aren't based in New York doing Broadway shows. It's no secret that Chicago has some of the best actors in the country. And that is something that I knew coming here. Like, I was like, I'm going to be learning from these people. And I do truly feel that way. And the Chicago, like, talent is top tier, just like New York. So it really is. Broadway is just a place and a credit. And it's obviously a very, like illustrious thing. It's kind of like the dream because monetarily it pays more probably than any other type of doing theater in the country. Maybe
it also costs more to live there.
It also costs more. That is very true. The cost of living, it's equal. But yeah, I mean, for me, it was a no-brainer decision because I was able to book this dream role. And I also booked Hamilton around the same time. So I was able to make it work to do like 7 months in Hamilton, then come do this show. But for a lot of people, they would get a job in a show like Hamilton. That's a stable job. What's called in New York, a government job where you know you have stability. You can have kids, you can buy a house, whatever. And you stay for years and years. That was never my goal joining the show, but everyone in their career has different goals. I like to bop around a little more and I really want to be playing leads, and there's not a ton of roles other than King George and Hamilton I could play. So there wasn't a lot of upward momentum for me to stay there
you had roles in Hamilton, but yeah, as primarily an ensemble member with people,
yes.
There was, you weren't going to play Alexander Hamilton, not at this age.
Right.
Wait a few years, you'll be back. the King George line.
Yes.
But one of the things I also noted that you've written, you said, you know what, this was a dream role for you. So maybe whatever you had been in at the time, you would have grabbed this. What was it about playing Frank Jr. that was a dream role for you? Was it that charm?
To be honest, it's the music. I started singing this music in college. I was assigned Goodbye, his big 11 o'clock number, in voice lessons, and I was struggling. Like, in college, JJ would be really proud of how I'm able to sing this show now, because he could not have. But I was singing this material in voice lessons, and even the writers of the show. So my favorite musical of all time is Hairspray, and it's written by the same music.
I was going to say, Shaman and Whitman, there's your Hairspray. Yep. There's your connection to them,
And who I got to work with on the workshop of Smash.
And they were here opening night, weren't they?
Yep. Mark Shaman was here, and his husband. So that was so cool. He flew in to see the show, and so when I auditioned for Hairspray at the Muni in St. Louis, which I know you know, I'm sure a bunch of people know in this area, but I auditioned for that in college, and I auditioned with Live in Living Color, which is the opening song of Catch Me If You Can. So it's a legacy. Like, I booked that was my first Equity, like Actors Equity professional gig as a college kid that I booked in the summer, and it was by using a song from Catch Me If You Can. So it's been a part of my life for a decade now, which is cool.
Yeah, and by the way, when you met the cast initially, every time I have him on the show, I have to clear this up with people. So I'm curious, did you know or did you ask James Earl Jones Jr., whether he was the son of James Earl Jones.
Oh, absolutely. That was the first day, day one. I was like, James Earl Jones. And then he said, actually, interestingly, he said that his nickname, he's called JJ. And so we are both JJ. We find commonality in that.
Yeah, and exactly. And they, by the way, they are cousins. So there is a relationship, uh-huh. but it's not a child. And everybody else you've been working about, I mean, I mentioned Nathaniel Stampley and stuff. What a treasure. And Sean Fortunato, who just does, and Alexis Rostin. I mean, even in roles less major in the show, but it's almost as though you can see this major Chicago talent, because if you've ever heard Alexis, besides the show, sing, she'll blow you away. She played Billie Holiday in Lady Day here. I mean, you've got such talent that I'm guessing some of these people wanted to just perform with you and others just wanted to be a part of this show.
Well, yeah, and I think also it's a testament to the team because, like, Deirdre Goodwin, our choreographer, and Jess Fish, our director, like, there's people a part of this that literally people in our cast were like, I said yes because I will do anything that you ask me to, this creative team, which is awesome. So I love that that's the vibe and energy, and hopefully I can continue to be a part of that family now.
By the way, before I came to see the show and meet you a couple of weeks ago, I had dinner at the restaurant traditionally known as Three Embers. I think now they're calling it the Pan Am, because what they've been doing, you know, is that with each show that's been there, they change the menu. So in Joseph, it was a lot of Mediterranean food. At Titanic, I encouraged them to have iceberg lettuce, and they did. But anyway, so now with you is kind of the Pan Am Cafe, and the menu is based on the Pan Am First Class menu, and among other things. So have you had a chance to eat it and try that? You posted something the other night. I'm thinking maybe you did.
I was at a different restaurant because I needed to just get off campus, you know? But my family, when they've come, they're like, oh, wait, this is one of the best meals I've ever had. They were like, this is wild. They just came this past weekend, my mom and her two sisters. So yeah, that was very cool.
JJ, I want to talk to you about your background. Folks who got plugged into you recently, of course, know you because of Hamilton. But what's really fun about you, it's these videos that you post. It's the behind the scenes, the mics on, mics off kind of videos that you do. Talk a little bit. It's sort of like you're trying to bring Broadway and theater into people's lives who just get to enjoy it from the seat in the theater or from their homes.
Yes. Well, I will say as a kid, I was in the YouTube generation. I grew up loving YouTube, and I actually made some skits and things when I was a teenager, and I stopped making videos online because kind of just, you know, adolescence. And I also decided to get more into theater and pursue it in college and train. So I kind of fell off of video and content creating, but it was something I always loved doing. And then during the pandemic, when I moved back home, I was home for like a year and a half living with my parents in my childhood bedroom. And I remember like cleaning out my room and my closet, and I found all of these wigs that my sisters had given me over the years for these YouTube videos I made as a kid. And so I just started making these like point of view POV videos using a green screen effect on TikTok, and basically showing what Broadway actors do on stage when our mics are on versus off. I started with doing a video like in the show Waitress. The ensemble is just sitting on stage at the diner like the whole show. And I remember seeing the show and being like, what are they talking about in these diner booths? And I was like, well, probably like what I was doing when I was at Book of Mormon. I was in Book of Mormon for 3 years before COVID. And I was
in fact, you were with my friend Nick Rouleau.
Yes. Love Nick. What a talent. He's awesome. Such a sweetie. But yeah, so I was like, oh, this is such an interesting thing that like people don't know, because in children's and community theater and a lot of these like shows, when you only run for like a weekend or things like that, the sound systems aren't designed for that, or like the sound engineers don't know that. But when you're on Broadway, the line mixing, like if you're not speaking or singing, your mic is off. So it's safe to talk backstage or on stage or whatever. So anyway, I started getting requests, and people were like, can you do Wicked? Can you do Les Mis? Can you do Hamilton? And I made a bunch of Hamilton POV videos. And then it was crazy to be in the show all these years later and be on stage and be like, I'm literally doing what I was making videos about like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. It's so cool.
Is it also true that as you depart the stage on some nights, I don't know that you do this every night, but this is something my partner caught that you did, which is you will dance your way off with sort of an homage dance to something else.
So when I was at Back to the Future, we had this like just 15 seconds of improv dancing, waving to the audience as the curtain comes down, which many shows have. And one of my friends in the cast, Brendan and I, he would start giving me an 8 count to do in the wing. He'd be like, okay, he'd teach it to me in 10 seconds, a dance, and he'd come up with it on the spot. And then he'd teach it to me, and then we'd go on stage, and at the end, we would do our little 8 count of choreography. And then we started to do One Day JoJo Siwa Came to See the Show, and we did a piece of choreography from her music video, and then from there it kind of like someone filmed it and I posted it and it blew up, and then we started doing a bunch of TikTok dance trends and it became this whole thing. We did like 20 or 30 videos of that, of like incorporating dances into our Broadway curtain call, which people loved and the show loved too.
Would you be as successful as you are now if there wasn't the TikTok social media world? How critical has that been to your career?
I don't know. I think, okay, here's the thing. In a weird way, a lot of people, like, obviously I had already made it to Broadway, okay? So I had already kind of done that. But I think at the time when the pandemic happened, I was like, I'm a good ensemblist. I'm a good dancer. Maybe I'll get into choreographing or being a dance captain or stuff like that. I was swinging at Book of Mormon and which are all, by the way.
That's a theater term, by the way.
Oh yes, yeah. Swinging, yeah, not like the
right.
So I was covering 7 tracks at Book of Mormon, so I was a cover, and so I kind of was just like, I think this is what I can do and my capacity. And for some reason, online and drawing this huge audience, and you know, I think it helped to demystify Broadway and make it seem not as scary and elitist and far off. It's like, no, we're just like grown-up theater kids that are doing this. This is fun. We're doing what we love, you know? And it's not that deep. And I think all of these people being drawn to my energy, my humor, and my just personality, I realized that I have so much power in that. And I was like, oh, wait, it's not just about talent. It's about like that special something. And it helped me realize that I had that. And I think that I was able to come back into the industry, into auditions, and into these rooms, and just with this confidence that kind of was gifted to me from the outside, I was able to actually believe, oh, hey, I actually have this. And so it's just given me a lot of confidence, in which has built when I did Back to the Future and I covered Marty. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, now I'm playing a lead role on Broadway like once a week, and like I'm really good at it. And so I was like, I can't go backwards. Like, I need to keep challenging myself. And so playing this role was the next biggest challenge for me. Also dancing Hamilton, I was like, if I can do that show and dance that show, like, I can rest easy knowing that I danced, in my opinion, the hardest show on Broadway. So
yeah, that's stunning stuff. Tougher than Fosse. so you're this young boy growing up in Wilmington, North Carolina. You go to Elon University, but who inspired? Because you know, it's not like, oh, I grew up in New York and I would go to Broadway shows all the time. There are those who have that story. That's not you. So what is it that got into the water in North Carolina, which led you, you know, who inspired you? Who do you look at when I want to be that person?
I was first born in Annapolis, Maryland, and I grew up there till I was 8. So when I did my very first children's theater show when I was 8 years old, I was in Annapolis, Maryland. But I grew up seeing one of my oldest sisters. She grew up doing theater, and I would go to see her shows. And I would see her and her theater friends and that community. And that was when I was like, oh, wait, this is what I want to be a part of. So it really was like the community and like children's theaters that really got me into theater. And my parents, also my dad, loved musicals, and he would listen to soundtracks. He'd play Pippin. He'd play, you know, he had all these songs. Like, there was a song from Pippin that was my mom and dad's first dance at their wedding. So like, it's very, I come from a very theatrical
Runner of the Sky?
Loving family.
Was it,
it was,
love
it was
song.
Love Song.
Love Song. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. And so anyway, I just, it's been a part of my blood, you know, even though no one in my family pursued it career wise. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was something I loved doing, and then I would be taken to shows, and I just grew up doing children's and community.
So I kind of wondered whether you might say somebody like an Andrew Rannells or somebody who has that light, you know, young, fun kind of persona that plays in everything. Although I'm not sure Andrew dances as well as you, but I won't say that. I don't know that. So that leads you on. And then that first break, you remember like your first audition, what was it?
Ooh,
for Broadway.
For theater?
Yes.
Or like professionally?
Well, yes, I'm referring to that, yes.
Okay, so my first professional theater audition Well, I auditioned. I did summer stocks and those kinds of things in college. My first
And you were
Broadway
Paper
audition.
Mill with Hercules. Where that does that fit in the early part
That
of this?
was like 2 or 3 years ago. That was
Okay.
right before Back to the Future. I did a
Okay.
workshop of that and the Paper Mill production. But Book of Mormon was my first Broadway callback. So I landed it right away. I ended up actually, I got a self-tape appointment for it while I was still in at Elon in college. I got a call back to fly up to New York to go. The callback was 2 days after I graduated college, my graduation date in May. And so I packed up my apartment, drove up to New York, or sorry, drove to the airport, flew to New York for like a few days to go to the callback, and I got a final callback for the next day. Didn't know that it was a final callback. I didn't even know they were looking for someone immediately. And they literally, within 24 hours, like they asked me if I wanted to join the Broadway company as a swing. They had called the head of my theater program at Elon and was like, "Can he do this? He's like 20 years old. Can he do this?" And she was like, "Yes, he can." So it literally was a Cinderella Broadway audition story, just right place, right time, 3 days after graduating. It was crazy.
That is stunning. By the way, we almost have to wrap this up, but there's a little more I want to talk to you about. Not done with you. Can you hang with me so we can talk more for those
Of
folks who
course.
on Monday this show launches at WGNradio.com as a podcast and also YouTube and around the town of Chicago, all sorts of places that people will find it. But we get to talk a little bit more, and your fans are going to want to be able to hear of that. But before I wrap, I do want to say, if you were thirsty right now, what would you drink from?
Why my behind the curtain mug? Of course.
And
Get
you
you a
know
little
what?
morning cup of joe.
And JJ, there's people watching you right now that they're jealous saying, I want one of those. So let me encourage everybody, if you go to WGNTV.com/store, you can be like JJ and have some coffee. Strangely, JJ, you not only can get a t-shirt, which you have, but you can even put it on a shower curtain or a skateboard. Would you like one of those?
Oh my gosh, a skateboard? It's giving Marty McFly. That could be cool.
Right? Imagine getting that. Go back to Back to the Future. We do this interview again, and I get a
Right.
skateboard with that logo on it.
Yes.
But for now, JJ Neiman, I encourage everybody to go see you at Catch Me If You Can through October 19th, MarriottTheater.com. But if you're watching this or listening to it on WGNRadio.com, stick with us because we're about to carry on this conversation. Thanks for watching us here on Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. We'll see you next week. And welcome back to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain. We're in our bonus conversation here on WGNRadio.com and all the other places you are listening and watching your podcast, including AroundTheTownChicago.com. And I'm talking to JJ Neiman. This, I don't, you know what? I don't, I was like the up and coming. You're not even up and coming. You're here.
We're here, baby. We're here, the Marriott Theater.
So have you gotten, so now we have freedom because we're not watching
Right.
TV clocks, but have you had a chance to go downtown? Have you experienced the city at all? The architectural boat ride? Does your schedule allow anything?
You know what? It has been one thing after another because I had to do a brand deal trip on my one day off. And then the following week I was sick. So I was like bedridden. I was like, okay, we're recovering. So it really hasn't been ideal. But that being said, I have some days that I'm planning on myself and my castmates. We're gonna hit up the city. I'm actually going to Northwestern on Monday to do a Q&A there with the theater students, which will be fun.
Oh,
So I'll
great.
already be in the city. I'm gonna do a whole city day, I think.
You know some people who got their start at Northwestern. You probably know a lot of them.
I mean, it's like one of the top programs. I didn't get in there. It's a hard school to get
Yeah.
into.
Well, and one of the great graduates from there, if you know, Greg Edelman, who was recently in Elephants on Broadway, and Greg and I went to school together through high school, and let it be known that we did Play It Again, Sam together, and I got the Woody Allen role. Sure, Greg
Ooh.
makes it to Broadway, but I'm here with you. You tell me who won that battle. I also want to ask you a little bit about Chicago audiences because you've been playing this now for several weeks. And I have this theory, and I ask a lot of people who join me who are on Broadway, like Sean Allen Krill and just different people who come here or people who are from here and have gone to Broadway. I know that being on Broadway is the thing. As I said, you got some emails from people or some messages from people. How dare you leave Broadway? But the reality of it is, I view Broadway audiences, as lovely as Broadway is, so much of it is tourism. You go to New York, you see a show.
That's
But
true.
Chicago audiences, JJ, we know theater. Is it different here? I think we're more discriminating audience here in a good way?
I don't know. I mean, it's been very lovely. I think it's no secret that the Marriott Theater has a lot of, it's a lot of an older crowd, so it is definitely an older crowd than I'm used to.
I
But I'm
even brought
also
the
like,
age limit down.
I told my mom when she was at the show, I was like, you might be the only one with color in your hair at the show today at the 1 p.m. Wednesday matinee. But you know what? They are so with it. They love it. And I will say something that has made me very feel very honored and also very excited is that my castmates in the show have all said they have never seen a show at the Marriott have so many, especially on the weekends, have so many kids, college kids, high school kids, and families come to the show. They've said they've never seen a production here attract more youth. And I'm like, if that's from social media and stuff, that is a win because it's getting more kids into theater and also them getting to experience how cool the Marriott space is and how amazing the productions are here. And we've had people, every single show, we've had people tell us that they've driven in from Detroit, Michigan, or Iowa, or St. Louis, flown from Nashville, flown from Pennsylvania. Like, it's crazy to me that people are coming from all over the country to see this. So I feel super honored by that. And so there has been a little bit of sprinkled tourism in here too, mixed in with the Chicago audiences, which has been cool.
Yeah, and I'm not blowing smoke at you, but trust me, they're coming in because you're in this show. And when
Oh,
they promoted the show, it was never come see Catch Me If You Can. It was always a come see J.J. Neiman and Catch Me
thank
If You Can.
you.
So the fact that people are coming in is not surprising. The fact that you're drawing a younger audience. I mean, when I saw Titanic, I had people sitting next to me who I'm fairly sure were on the Titanic. And we're, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Marriott. Don't get mad at me, Marriott. That was just a joke.
Love.
I come to every show. But yeah, I mean, it's clear. And as I've said, I've seen the folks who wait for you. And I mean, we still call it stage dooring, I guess, even though you're inside at the Marriott. But yeah, I've seen crowds waiting for you that you just don't typically see around there. And maybe it's because they brought you here for this. So when you leave and you go back to, well, what is next for you? Do you know yet?
Ooh, rest. Lord, rest. Because the way that I've been going for 3 years and, you know, experiencing grief and just like a lot of stuff and in life and not having time to process, I think it'll be nice to have at least a couple months. I told my agents, don't submit me for anything. I'm taking November, December off at least. So that's my plan is to rest, recover, and miss it just a little bit so that I will want to do that next job even more. But something will, I'm not worried about
Yeah,
it.
there's certain people just wait for the next thing. And growing up, by the way, did you get a lot of, and I, as I, we mentioned sort of off the air that I know you recently lost your dad, and I'm so sorry about that, and I relate to it, and I understand. How supportive were your parents of this as a career? I mean, a lot of parents of kids who say, I want to be in the theater go, yeah, lawyering is good too.
I think, well, super supportive of my career. I will say when you're going as a high schooler who wants to major in it, there is a little bit like, huh? Because I mean, I certainly did not even know that that was a thing until I was like a junior in high school. I didn't even know people could go to college for musical theater. I didn't even know that. And so again, I wasn't really like, I was very involved in community and children's theater, but I was not at all like, I didn't know Broadway well. I didn't know like the names of the, you know, I was not,
You
I
didn't,
didn't
you weren't one of
have
those growing up listening to cast recordings all the time?
like, no. Only if I was in the shows, or if my dad was playing them on his soundtrack. So it was interesting. It was something that I did, but not something that I was like a fan of as much at first. Even though now I'm like, how was I not growing up? But it's just different now with the internet. I probably would have been all over that now. But yeah. But yeah. When I was going into college, they made me apply to a lot of schools academically, and they were like, we'll let you do a couple of schools for theater and see what happens. They kind of they did go all in a little bit because I did some coachings with people to prepare for auditions, and one of my directors who came in from New York who did one of our like summer shows and in Wilmington told my parents like JJ really can do this as a career. Like, I believe in him. And if he went and trained at like a conservatory style program, I think that he could do this. And so my parents were like, oh, okay, maybe he actually can. So that's kind of when it clicked. We kind of needed someone to validate that for us a little bit and give us that little push.
But it
So.
worked. Was JJ, was it your parents as a little kid? You were JJ, or did you give yourself the nickname? When did JJ kick
Yeah,
in?
I've always been, yeah, just growing up, always been JJ
Are you a
as my nickname, but then it obviously became my professional name too.
Yeah, yeah. It could be, you'll be, one day you'll be a trivia as to what the JJ say. Will you tell us what the JJ stands for?
You want me to tell you?
Yeah, that'll be a
Jeremiah
big trivia.
Is my real name.
There we go.
Yes.
That's a great name too, by the way.
It's a great name. Very biblical. Yup. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You are certainly a triple threat in the theater world. The triple threat is the acting, the singing, the dancing. You do all of those. And I was going to ask you, you kind of hinted at this earlier. I was going to say which of those three like is your top, but I have a feeling you put dancing as your number one. Is that right?
Not anymore, but
okay.
Yes. Only because, and I only say that because I, doing Hamilton, I was like, woo, these bones aren't getting any younger. And I know that sounds so funny to say.
Tell that to Thane Jasperson, who's been in the show for since day one.
Hats off to him because literally I could never. He is a rock star human. I'm just like, how is this man doing this? But yeah, I growing up, definitely dancing was like my first. But this show really showed me, and like doing some other roles, I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's changed my mind a little bit. I definitely feel like I lead with singing first now, but yeah.
And you also, one of the things, I don't know, have you ever got, I believe you play guitar and piano and ukulele. I imagine that's for a future White Lotus role, perhaps.
That'd be cool.
Wouldn't that be nice? But yeah, so does that ever work its way into the roles that you're in, playing any of the instruments?
Well, a little bit. Like, I'm not like proficient like a lot of people are. Unfortunately, I should have kept up with my lessons, even though I grew up.
Piano, so I get it.
Yep. So I mean, I played guitar fake in Back to the Future, so I had to know how to actually play it to fake it. And because someone in the orchestra actually plays that big Johnny B. Goode guitar solo. And I've played ukulele in shows before. I played it in like a Shakespeare show. So anyway, it sometimes incorporates itself, for sure.
And I asked you earlier, you know, whether you'd want to play one of those evil people like Scar or something like that. But let me shift that now. What about just shifting to a drama? What if they brought back Our Town again, or they do something which is of a JJ flavor, but it's a drama?
Absolutely. Well, like, yeah, I mean, I would love to do a play. That would be so lovely. Musicals are hard. Not that plays are not hard. It's just hard in a different way. And I love.
Are you a Shakespeare guy? Would you do Hamlet if they gave it to you?
I'm not a Shakespeare guy, but I'm not, I think that there's probably, I'll leave that to the people who are pros at that, but I would totally love to challenge myself with that. And also would love to do, like, I pitched to Jess Fish, our director, one of her dream shows to direct is Next to Normal. And that one of my,
that's a role
shows.
For you.
And it's a great role. And again, I would love to sink my teeth into something that's a similar, and I can still sing like myself and still be somewhat myself, but like a much darker and like handle some heavier topics. I would love to do that for sure.
You know, you are putting yourself, I mentioned Aaron Tveit to you before. And I think I told you, I met Aaron during Catch Me If You Can on Broadway, mm-hmm. along with the real Frank Abagnale. What a great story
so
that was.
Cool.
But you are, the roles you're listing, you've said everything but Moulin Rouge. I mean, is Aaron Tveit somebody
Moulin
that
Rouge, you would be like, that'd be
yeah.
fun.
Is he somebody that you look at and admire?
Oh, totally.
I see you as different, but you're picking those roles.
I'm definitely different than him, for sure. And I think even just the way we both played Frank Jr., so different. And he's an incredible, oh my gosh, his voice is literally like, I could listen to it all day. But he's just someone who we literally have the same range. So it makes sense, like in my mind, like Link Larkin in Hairspray, a dream role, like Gabe in Next to Normal, a dream role, like Christian in Moulin Rouge. Those are all ones that are all perfect for my vocal range too, because we have the same kind of range. So
once you start doing the leads that you are doing, if somebody offered you a show that you really wanted to be in, it's just a show you always love, but they said, JJ, unfortunately, all we have is Barber Number 3. I'll make it Sweeney Todd. No, but would you go into a show, or at this stage, and I guess I'm asking it as a professional question because you're going to meet with Northwestern students, and if I were in that audience, I'd want to say that, like, once you start getting leads, do you have to say, I really can only do leads now because it's the right thing for my career? Or would you say, I don't care, it doesn't matter?
It depends. I think at this point, yes, when it comes to especially like regional theaters or like touring. When it comes to Broadway shows, if I have the opportunity to be a part of something that's really special and new, like I think of something like Hamilton, and Ariana DeBose had already played a lead on Broadway and she went and did the ensemble in Hamilton, that was one of the best career decisions she could have done, because that catapulted her even further. And if she had said no and was like, I don't want to do that for a year, then who knows? I mean, now she's an Oscar award winner. So you kind of have to, like, sometimes take a gamble. And especially if I had the opportunity to be a part of something new, and even, like, to cover someone, let's say someone like Aaron Tveit, or maybe someone closer to my actual age, but, like, I would be like, yeah, because I will get to do that role and I will get to have all those challenges. And you never know, if the show is a hit, you can take over the role, you can do it on tour, you can do it, you know, all over the world. So you just never know. So it just depends on the project and the right thing. But yeah, it's definitely something that I, in my head now, am having to...
And a lot of Broadway people end up going to television, to movies. I totally can see you as a sitcom kind of guy.
Oh, I'd love that.
So I'm saying, but that, isn't that the way, again, things grow, is because you make your name on Broadway, people see, but then it's those producers who see you and say, we need him. And I'm thinking of, like, Nathan Lane's recent show, right? Modern Family, but the new thing that ran with Linda Lavin, who passed away and whatever, but it's a really great show. So do you see yourself? Is it like, yeah, take me to TV. I can see myself doing a sitcom.
Absolutely. I think I have to invest myself in that a little bit more. You know what I mean? Like, I need to, you know, make a reel and a bit, some clips. And because in order to even get some of those auditions, you have to have something to show for it. And because I haven't done any TV film, I don't have, like, a resume or even clips or footage to really use. So I kind of, that is actually something that on my break, which isn't really a break, but it's going to be a break from the 8-show week schedule. That's what I wanted a break from, but not a break from auditioning and bettering myself as a performer and trying to see some opportunities. So I think that's on my to-do list for sure. Cause I think you need to be able to show that you can do it in order for people to know you can do it. I also want to be on reality shows. I'm applying for The Traitors. I love the competition shows. I'm such a nerd.
Not Survivor?
So no. Keep me away from the snakes and the bugs and But Big Brother, I would maybe do. I love Big Brother. I don't know. So those kinds of shows too. I'm considering applying to some of them because I think my personality could lend itself pretty well to that too.
Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, we'll do that too.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to have to send this around to some people and just get this commitment from you. Let's do it. Something else that I think that students would want to ask you. So what I mentioned Thane Jasperson to you before, just as a kind of a humorous thing, but Thane's been in Hamilton since day one. He will be there probably until it closes. So how does an actor, and I don't mean Thane, but how does a performer stick with the show even 8 times a week? Do you not have nights when you're like, oh, I'm not feeling well, or I'm, you know, how does an actor make it happen 8 nights a week? Is it the magic of the audience, or are there nights you're on there and you're going, I'll be honest, I don't feel it every night?
It's so interesting. Like, I've been fortunate to be in some shows. Like I said, Book of Mormon, I was a swing. So I covered 7 roles. I was off stage whenever I wasn't on, even though I was on literally every week. I think in 3 years, there were only 2 weeks in that 3-year span that I wasn't on for at least one show. But that was fresh. I was playing from all of these different perspectives, different featured roles. It was a challenge. At Back to the Future, my ensemble role was fun, but it wasn't particularly challenging. But playing Marty McFly and George McFly, which are literally basically polar opposite type of characters, and being able to do it at a drop of a hat almost every week was a huge challenge. When I got to Hamilton, the challenge was the show itself. But to be honest, I missed covering roles. I missed playing roles. I literally was like, if I didn't have Frank Jr. coming up, I don't know what my mind would be doing. Like, going through grief and going through stuff in my personal life while also feeling like, wait, like, I'm missing this whole part of myself that gets to, like, actually be the vessel to tell the story. The dancing in Hamilton is a big part of the storytelling, but to not be able to have just a small, small featured role, it wasn't about, like, being a star of the show. It was like, I'm missing part of what I'm really good at doing. So I don't know. Every actor handles things differently. And I think every actor also, respectfully, we all have different capacities and abilities. Some people went to college for dance and they want to dance on Broadway and that's all they want to do. Or they want to dance captain and swing and they love doing all of those notes and running rehearsals and maintaining a show. Some people, that's their brain. I love the challenge of covering roles, and I think now I'm just like at a point where I'm like, I want to be just doing them full time, and Frank Jr. was my test. I was like, okay, this is the hardest, genuinely, I think this is the hardest role I have ever sung and ever probably will sing. I don't know many, I sing 11 out of 17 songs in the show. Like, I don't know many roles other than Elphaba and like a couple, which obviously I'll never play, that do
never
as much
never.
As this character and like, right, never say never. But I'm just like, this is one of the hardest roles I could ever do. And I'm like, okay, let me see how I do with an 8-show week. Let's do it. And now that we're like a month into shows, I'm like, hell yeah. Now I can go back to New York and be like, let's go. Like, I'm ready to walk into those auditions and be like, no, I know how to do this. You can trust me. And I think that's part of it is the trust.
Yeah. And I want to, it's also your mind because, mm-hmm. I mean, COVID, of course, put the role of understudies on the map, right? We went from, oh, crap, we have an understudy on today. Give me my money back to now we tremendously respect understudies. Kathy Voigt was originally on the show, who's in Beauty and the Beast, but she had her great moment in Music Man where she stepped in with two seconds notice and right. And Hugh Jackman went on afterwards to just, I think like that really made a difference when he went, you need to know what just happened here. How do you, when you're, you know, put you in the ensemble, whatever, but you're understudying the lead, Marty McFly, whatever it is. Do you have to, like, every night before you go to bed, do you have to run the show in your head again? Because what if the next morning you're on in 2 hours?
Well, once you know it, you know it. Like, I don't know. I might be in the minority saying that, but once I know a show, I'm just like, I'm good. Like, you just trust. I do keep a handful of notes of things that I'm like, for example, like, when you're a cover, you'll get notes from the artistic or creative team or your stage manager, and you need to remember those for the next time you go on. And it could be a day later, it could be a week, it could be a month later. So you need to remember those. So I would write down all of the notes, and I'd every time before I go on, I'd review all of the feedback that I had gotten, even from the last few times I had been on, mm-hmm. and make sure I don't repeat any of the same mistakes. I do the Polaroid snap on the music cue exactly how, because I did it a little early the show before, like think little tiny things. There's always something to adjust. But that is some of the fun. But once you know it, I mean, during Back to the Future, I just made it my mission during tech. I was like, I am not in control of being rehearsed because they don't have time to rehearse me right now, but I can be word perfect. I can know every word of the score, every word of the script. And I took that upon myself. And when I went on in previews before we had even opened, hadn't learned half the show. And they were like, do we have to cancel the show or can we put you on with 3 hours notice? And I was like, I can do it. And I had a list of everything I needed to touch, everything I needed to jump on, jump off of, safety things, fight things, skateboard things, flying car things. It was a very dangerous show, but I was like, I can do it. And I was really proud of myself. I went on with 3 hours notice. So it was like
Do other cast members, do they assist you in some way? I mean, like, that you don't, but in some way they're like guiding you or doing something. So like, here's where we're going next, just in case. Is that kind of help?
I mean, it definitely helped for those scenes and songs that I had not rehearsed. And I was just like pretending to know what I was doing, or I had just watched it in rehearsal or on a video. So for sure. And then obviously you had people like I was playing opposite Roger Bart, and he just took me into his dressing room and he said, let's just run these lines. Let's all of the bantery scenes, because those scenes are like boom, 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 ping pong. And he was like, let's just run it so that we like feel it. And he was like so helpful. And everyone was so there for me every time. So, and was for everyone who was in similar situations.
Well, I hope you'll think of something next, like recording an album. As I talked to you, I remember back to, I did a show called Backstage. This is behind the curtain. Backstage, which was a live TV thing in front of a live studio audience, the cast of Hamilton, the cast of everything. But when I did Book of Mormon, it was Nick Rouleau, who I've stayed in touch with. And also, do you know back in the Nick Rouleau days, do you know who played, Who played Cunningham in that national tour? It was Ben Platt.
Oh, that's right. Yes. No, I did know that.
It was Ben Platt before he became Ben Platt, which was fascinating. And then I did Kinky Boots. And then having, of course, the stars of Kinky Boots like Billy Porter before he was Billy Porter. Although I think he would say, no, I was already Billy Porter, but okay. But anyway, my point is, so as I see these and I see you and I just have this feeling that I don't know what it is X years from now, we'll be sitting down and I'm going to say, oh, I talked to J.J. Neiman before he was J.J. Neiman.
Oh, I love
that. I think you already are J.J. Neiman, but I think there's like this phase that's coming.
I would love to think that too. And I think, again, it's just really sweet to see. It's interesting to have been in a show like Hamilton and Stage Door. Obviously, a lot of I would say 50 to 75% of the people at the Stage Door knew me by name and were really sweet to me at the Hamilton Stage Door. But they were going to see Hamilton whether or not I was in it. But to be in a show where people are actually like traveling and coming to see, this is the first time I've ever experienced that. And so it's just been so special. And I think it's given me even more of a sense of like power and confidence in a good way to hopefully be able to take into my career and be like, yeah, like I got this. I got something special and I'm excited to continue to foster that. And I appreciate people like you speaking that positivity into me. It means a lot.
Well, and those are great words to end this interview on because we feel it. It's been so great to have you in this area, and people again can see you through October 19th. It's not over yet. To get up to the Marriott, MarriottTheater.com, and catch JJ in Catch Me If You Can. Thank you, my friend. It's been so
Thank
good talking
you.
to you at this long period of time, which we didn't get on the night of the theater. So it's been great to getting to know you a little bit better here, and I appreciate your time. And
Thank
thanks for
you.
watching us here on Behind the Curtain, everybody, and we'll see you next week.